everyone, are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. I guess not. That's always a good thing. Alrighty, everybody. Good evening. This is Gordon, W2TTT. And this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association, Chestnut Ridge Radio Club, Technical Net. This net is brought to you every week on a frequency of 146.955 on the 2-meter repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Amateur Radio Club, located in Alpine, New Jersey. There we go. Frequency is 146.955, 46.955, and the PL is 141.3. We do have access via Echolink on Kilo 2 Foxtrot Juliet dash Lima, K2 Foxtrot Juliet dash L Lima, though. And you're welcome to join in that way as well. We have a special check-in for stations going that way. In the meantime, what is this net about? That is about a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, science and natural phenomena that underlie our wonderful hobby. It's about our experiences, how we've shared them, how we've aspired to do things, how we've done things in the past that we aspire to do again, things we absolutely do not want to do again. Of course, how we serve others, that's a very, very key point as well. So, with no further ado, let's talk about how we check into the net. We check in by our call sign, our name. Then we indicate whether we have a question, comment, for sale, swap, or wanted item, some combination of those things, or none of the above. You might ask, if it's none of the above, why would I check in? And the answer is very simple. We check in order to really let us know who's on the net and therefore what the audience really wants. And we can kind of tell that by who shows up, but not always. There are also times when we will draw upon someone who checked in, irrespective of whether or not they had anything to contribute at the beginning, to elaborate on something that they may have had an experience with, or they might have a similar circumstance they're aware of as that of a questioner, and we want to get their perspective on it as well. So, with no further ado, let's see, are there any stations whose call signs begin with Alpha? Okie dokie. How about stations whose call signs begin with the letter November?
This is N2OEF. One question.
Hello, Mr. Noel. We got your one question noted. Any other Novembers? Alrighty, how about whiskeys?
Good evening, Gordon. This is Jim, WA2UNP in Pearl River. And just listening this evening.
Okay, Jim, very good. Welcome aboard. Any other whiskeys?
This is WI2W, Steve. No questions or comments, just listening tonight.
Hey, Mr. Steve, very good. Welcome aboard. Could I ask a small favor, Steve? Can you write down who's just checked in? I'm not quite home yet.
Sure, that was Jim, WA2UNP, and myself so far.
Ahead of you all, N2OEL with a question.
Okay, N2OEL with a question.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I was hoping we'd be in the driveway before before too long, but everything's taking longer tonight. I have hit traffic light cycles that are 2 and 3 deep in order to go anywhere. It's truly amazing tonight. It's not because of the level of traffic, it's because of things like emergency road repair and things like that. So it just is what it is. But anyway, it's all good. Alrighty, any other whiskeys?
Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, Randy with a comment.
Hello, Randy with a comment. 2S. are. Very good. Welcome. Any other whiskeys?
W2NHZ, Matt Little Ferry. How you doing? Just listening tonight, Gordon.
Marvelous, Matt. Good to hear you. Was there another station under NHZ?
Yes, W2R, Charlie.
Wow, they're multiple deep. Okay, Charlie, I got you. Whiskey Echo to Romeo. Welcome, Charlie. And who is the station who just doubled with Charlie?
Good evening, Gordon. WA2QBC, Bruce, no traffic.
WA2 Quebec, Bravo, Charlie. Welcome aboard, Bruce. And I heard glowing reports of your conversation with Mr. Randy. So glad that you guys got acquainted. That's a wonderful thing. That's the real reason why we run the Ham Fest. Well, we run the Ham Fest to make a few shekels for the Boy Scout troop, but the truth is that we create a wonderful social opportunity that turns into a technical opportunity, which turns into more social. It's a wonderful thing. And let me just say this right in the middle of the roll call. Thank everybody for who were able to come out to support the troop on Saturday. That was just awesome. Alrighty, moving right along. Any other whiskeys? Okay, Kilo 2.
KD2, FTA. This is Alex with a question this evening.
Good evening, Alex. KD2 Fox Tango Alpha. Got you in. Any other Kilo 2s?
2 HPY, Greg. Just listening.
Hey, Greg, I might have butchered your prefix. Is it Kilo Delta 2 Hotel Papa Yankee?
Affirmative.
Welcome aboard, Greg. Thank you very much. KD2HPY, K2BAR. Alrighty, any other Kilo 2s?
This is KC2ASA, Peter out in Salzburg.
Okay, KC2, Alpha Sierra Alpha. Do I have that right, Peter?
Roger, roger. Good evening.
Greetings from Salzburg. Alrighty. Are you listening? Are you posting something? What's your intention, sir?
I may have a question, but Jim kind of encouraged me. I was talking to him on D-Star earlier this evening, and I decided to listen. But if things go well, maybe I'll ask a question about something. But I may have to switch over to EchoLink, depending on what else happens this evening.
No problem. It's K2 Fox Roger Leah -L. All right, fine. So we're going to list you with a question. Just because. Alrighty, any other Kilo 2s?
KD2DNY, name is Bill. Just listening.
KD2DNY. Good evening, Bill. Welcome aboard. Any other Kilo 2s?
KD2DIG, Don, just listening.
KD2DIG. Greetings, Don. Any Kilo 2s?
Kilo 2, Zulu, Charlie, Dave, no questions or comments.
Ah, a Kilo 2. Kilo 2, Zulu, Charlie, Dave. You got glowing reviews on your 746 repair from our friend Rick, W2LCN. Thank you for helping him out. As far as how he found out about you, you can blame Steve, WI2W. He threw you under the bus with glowing reviews. So, welcome, Dave. Good to hear you, and thank you again for helping our friend Rick from his little faux pas there with his audio interface. Alrighty. Any Kilo 2s? Okay. Any other Kilos?
QO Bravo 3, Papa Quebec Papa. Harry out of Elmwood Park. Just listening.
Hello, Harry. Welcome. Wow, it's great. KB3PQP. Welcome aboard. Any other Kilos? Alrighty. Any other stations on the repeater?
W2JEK, Don with a comment.
Good evening, Sir Donald. Welcome aboard, and nice to have you on board. We'll get you first, and then we'll go down the list. Any other call signs? Any call signs?
November 2, Mike Hotel. Mark, good evening, Gordon. Just listening tonight.
In 2MH from K2BAR. Very good, Mark. Hey, Mark, what time are you typically home tomorrow?
Well, let's see. Tomorrow being Friday, we do a lot in the afternoon, so I'm going to say 7 p.m.
Oh, from work?
Well, we don't quite go home from work. We go, we have a lot of things we do, and then by the time we're all done, that's when we get back home.
Okay. I'm going to text you during the net. Okay. I might even call you during that, but that's all right. We'll deal with that because we have a logistics issue for tomorrow that we can solve. I think we can solve it. All right. I do have a solution, but it involves driving out of my driveway during the net, which is not a problem. All righty. Any other stations checking in for that going? A station who just broke in, try it again, you're really weak.
Sorry about that, KD2GGR, William Medina.
Okay, welcome aboard, William. KD2 Golf Golf India. Kilo Delta 2 Golf Golf India. William, welcome aboard. K2BAR, anybody else? Alrighty. Very good. Any stations on Echolink? Okay, nothing heard. Alrighty. Well, then we're going to go to our first comment, and that would be our friend Don, K2, the W2, JEK, K2BAR. Go ahead.
Good evening. Good evening, everybody. K2BAR in the net, W2JEK here. Barra VE gang will be running a test session at St. John's Church in Bergenfield on Friday, December 26th, following a class that Gordon will be running. We will start testing at 7 p.m. We will be giving all tests, technician, general, and extra, if anybody needs to be tested at that time. We'll be in the basement of the church proper. And if you're coming, please, if you have a license, please bring your license and a copy. MID, like a photocopy, like a driver's license or passport, are two forms of non-photo ID. And bring a calculator. You can do that. Calculator must have its memory empty. Devices such as cell phone, iPods, etc. may not be used as a calculator. Test fee is going to be $15. That just about covers it. Got to have ID, money, license, and a copy of a license. Well, if you do not have a license, you need your social security number. Then you got to have a social security number. Or if you have a license or you wish to get an FRN number, you get it before the test session. Back to net. I got a phone call.
And I got a phone call. No. Okay, just kidding. Very good. Are there any questions or comments about what Don asked? We can quickly handle them for him. All right, well, thank you, Don. We'll definitely see Don a week from Friday, day after Christmas, for the test session. All righty. Steve, I may be, well, I'm definitely going to be rolling between here and Mark's house during the period of the net, so... anyway, let's see, I may end up needing a little bit of help for this, but we'll figure this out, no big deal. Alrighty, with no further ado, Noel, it's your question, K2BAR.
That's an easy question. Considering the limited HOA environment, Homeowners Association, I have a cypress tree that's 35 feet tall, but I swear about 30 feet in diameter going up a good 20 feet before it starts tapering in. And I'm thinking about one of those loops, the small loops, the 3-foot loop, the 4-foot loop that I saw at Dayton. There's a plethora of them for operating in limited locations. They're remotely tuned, so you can tune them from the shack because, of course, their bandwidth is going to be, 5K if you're lucky. The bandwidth of your signal, maybe. But, anyways, they're tunable. Another big advantage is if you can rotate them, they're bidirectional. So, what do you think of one of those? Oops, I just talked too long. I have a 1-minute limit on this thing, which I got to figure out how to change to 3 minutes. Anyways, so the question is, what do you think about one of those? MFJ makes a couple. Several other companies make, they range all the way in price from a low of a couple hundred dollars up to the several hundred dollar range. The frequency range, most of them seem to be from 20 meters up through 10 meters. A few of them will go down as far as 10 megahertz. Some of them, I think the really, really expensive ones can go even lower. But I don't know if you'd want to. That would be kind of hard. So anyways, back to net. K2BR, this is Centralia.
KC2ASA disconnected.
Oh, wow. I wonder if I disconnected Gordon.
No, I'm here. Raising my HT didn't have PL enabled. I'm sorry. So, personally, instead of all these weirdo antennas, I would get myself the largest screwdriver antenna I could get, put some radials down, and use that. I think that's the proverbial right answer.
Much happier with that than less money.
Steve, we doubled almost perfectly.
And you won for the entire length of the other transmission.
I won or Steve won?
Gordon won, Steve lost.
Okay, I said one of my pieces. I said use the biggest screwdriver you can get away with the ground plane. Steve, your ball.
Yeah, I my comment was I think that Noel would be very frustrated with that solution because you really can't turn around the bands and see what's happening very easily. Folks I know that have them, I know one fellow got his mounted at 30 feet horizontal and he just uses it for digital because you don't have to tune around, sort of tune it and forget it. I was going to suggest just using some kind of a wire up in that tree, a ballon at the bottom, some kind of an RF transformer, have a wideband solution. Happier with that. There's a couple different choices, but the screwdriver antenna is valid as well. Back to net.
Yeah, you know, the other approach is, you know, the proverbial, you know, 31-foot piece of wire, and you can even arrange it like a flag and go even longer, and, you know, put the remote tuner out at the base with some radials, too. That's yet another solution. So, there's a lot of interesting and simple solutions out there, but for God's sake, Noel, don't look stupid. Look, you know, get whatever metal you can up in the air as high and as away from things as possible. That will make you happiest, and as Steve said, avoiding frustration in that environment is key.
I have what appears to be several miles of small gauge insulated wire, approximately 22, 24, 26 gauge, lots and lots of rolls of it.
There you go, there's a good answer. And yeah, if you're only running 100 watts, I mean, good lord. I mean, don't you have one of those Hawaii ballons too that you could use and just extend the wire if you want?
I got that ready to go back up to Florida. But what I was thinking about was as the ground plane, the antenna appears to be I probably could do a circle easily of a 30-foot circle with maybe 100 radios to grab.
Yeah. Well, I was fortunate enough to find the 18-mile-an-hour driver in a 35 zone. As I'm going along here, I think it's fine now, thank God. Alrighty. But yeah, I would, you know, go for that wire and, you know, talk to someone in the local AM radio club down there. I'm assuming this is for your Florida home, so just get down there and, you know, talk to the guys on the local repeater and see who wants to play radio and, you know, play Robin Hood or Fisherman or whatever they want in order to get the wire across some trees or something.
Okay, and a quick comment. I finally got this 3,800 milliamp hour Bofang antenna. I'm not going to tell myself. Battery. And when you put it on the radio, it actually makes it look like a real HT, as opposed to the original one, which looks like a pack of cigarettes. That's it for me. Back to that, then to where you are.
Pretty good, Noel. Hey, I have a question for you since you're here and you may disappear later. You have digital AT&T digital home phone, and I'm not asking because you're an AT&T person. I'm asking because you're a customer. Because I'm an AT&T person. You are a user of that service. I'm actually thinking of switching over to it. You use it in a couple of different places. Where do you use it? And do you have the phone only version? Do you have the phone data version? And does it work for you?
I've never tried it on data. I have no idea telling which one. I have one permanently ensconced at my house in upstate New York because that solved the problem there where Verizon wanted $53 a month for local calling only and like $100 and a quarter to install the thing, which involves just hooking up at central headquarters the wire that was already there. Yeah, right. It's $25 a month. They advertise $19.99, but there's taxes, fees, whatever. Comes to $24.98. Exactly. I actually have one of them here about 2 feet behind me. Because, that way I have great home phone service right here in the nursing home, where the cells are sometimes a little flaky. I've taken it down the entire length of the East Coast to Key West. It's worked all the way. I've taken it to Mississippi through Alabama in the RV, and it's worked every place I set it up. I set it up in Lucedale, Mississippi when I was at my brother's house. I had home phone service in my RV for the entire length of my three-month trip, whatever. I actually had the home phone service when I was in Dayton. And yes, it works good. And I never had to actually go to the big antenna. The big antenna being the 30-inch high one with the 9-foot of cable that we said cobbled together so in case I got stuck in the middle of nowhere. I've always been able to get service with that little 4 or 5-inch rubber ducky they have in the back of the thing. Back to that answer, will ya?
Okay, well, thank you very much. That's useful. That's very useful. Anybody have any follow-on comments about that? So basically what this is a home phone-like environment, except that the uplink, instead of being copper or fiber, is cellular. So you plug in your standard home phone to it, but his uplink essentially is cellular, and he takes it with him. He's got a second one in his home in Western New York. Very cool. Hey, by the way, there'll be in a few years, there'll be a new casino up near your Finger Lakes home, up near entire New York. I heard that yesterday. That was very entertaining. Something else to do while you're in Western New York. Alrighty, very good. So I think our next comment is, I believe, Randy, W2S, K2BAR.
Thank you, Gordon. Good evening to everyone on the net. So my comment today has to do with computers of all sorts. I'm sitting here down in the shack and across across from the lab, surrounded by all kinds of iron, big iron, small iron, medium-sized iron. Stuff's running about 7 different versions of Linux and 3 versions of Windows. And one of the things I'm fooling with here in front of me is a 15-year-old, very small, very weak laptop by today's standards. And I talked to a number of people recently about can you put some new, you know, life into these things and reuse them for something, you know, simple terminals or a simple web browser or potentially a mesh node project or some such thing. And the answer is generally yes, you can. They may have some old expired version of Windows on it, like XP or 98 or even the one that is in front of me here. It had a version of Windows 95 on it, believe it or not. And all of that can be replaced by some fairly lightweight but yet useful versions of Linux. And I thought that might be of interest to people. Back to Net.
And on these extremely small versions, what are you using?
Well, the one on the machine right in front of me is called a Puppy Linux, P-U-P-P-Y Linux, and there are about a half a dozen fairly well-known, very tiny Linuxes, Linusi, I'm not really sure what the plural would be, but and another very popular one is, pardon my French, Damn Small Linux is the actual name of it, or DSL as it's known, and its claim to fame is not only is it a useful Linux, but it'll fit on a 1.44 megabyte floppy disk. Takes up hardly any room at all.
But functionally, would you rather have DSL or Puppy Linux?
Well, I like the little Puppy Linux because it's got kind of a friendly little user interface to it, and it's got some very nice graphic icons to it. So for someone who is transitioning from Windows to a version of Linux and they're fairly new to Linux, a thing like Puppy Linux might be a good transition vehicle because it has some of the user interface that would be familiar to most people.
And how does that user interface compare to, let's say, Ubuntu, 12.4 LTS or something like that, or 13X LTS, whatever it is?
Well, it's Puppy Linux is a lot, I guess, simpler in appearance, or I was about to use the word starker, but that's maybe the wrong connotation. It's it has simpler graphics. It's made for machines with simpler and lower resolution screens, as you might guess. The machine I'm in front of right now is a Pentium 2 of all things, and I think it only has 32 megabytes of memory in it, so it's quite an antique, but it's working fine. So again, simpler graphics, some different names for things, but fairly easy to figure out.
So let's get a couple of examples on some name differences on common tools that you might be of interest, that might be of interest to some of us.
Well, some of the common tools. The first is, after the thing's set up, to have a web browser on it of some sort. And so the one that comes with the package here for Puppy Linux is called SeaMonkey. Don't know why, but it is. So it's just a simple web browser, but the point is it works, and you can do what you would do mostly with any web browser. A different version of web browsers that's running on, I forget what version of Linux behind me, it's running on a very tiny single board computer called a Qubi board, C-U-B-I-E board, that's similar in size to like a Beagle board, you know, that kind of thing, and that's got a browser called IceWeasel, which is a fork of Firefox, and if you think about the two words there, it's sort of the opposite of Firefox. I guess that was their little sarcastic comment. Back to Ned.
Yeah, I got the reference. That was funny, actually. Very good. In fact, I have a problem with my QB board. It won't boot for some reason. Really bizarre, but anyway. One day we'll have to take care of it. I'll take a look at that. Maybe I'll just clone your image. I'll just start afresh with a new one. I'll just try it. Just build up another SSD. SD drive. You know, little thumb drive, whatever. We'll figure it out. Anyway, that sounds great. That sounds good. So anybody else have any questions for Randy about what's going on?
W3APP.
We have at least Paul, W2APP, who's joined the net. Welcome, Paul.
K2BR, W2APP. Just a quick comment on the Linux. I did that on a few. One of the most frustrating things I find is that a lot of the mainline Linux distributions won't actually run on the older PCs because they don't like the CPU and the chipsets. So if Puppy Linux works, if you can find a good one, stick with it, but just be careful that with some of the newer ones, when you start loading it in, you end up cutting CDs, loading them, they don't work, going to the next one, the next one, the next one, the next one. So it's like, stick with the lighter ones, and basically, once you get one that works, stick with it. Okay, with that W2APP, back to K2BAR.
Yeah, very good. So let me ask a question of both of you, particular Randy. Is there a package manager platform similar to Ubuntu and others, or even like the ARM machine, little ARM processors, like the Qubi board and the BeagleBone and the Raspberry Pis? They have package managers. Is there a package manager kind of environment, even if it's via the command line?
To the best of my knowledge, the real small ones like Puppy and DSL do not have package managers as far as I can recall. Some of the other more modern but still fairly small implementations like LXLE, which is a subset or a fork of Ubuntu Linux, and fairly small in size. I believe that uses the Aptitude, the APT package management application.
Very good. The slight in its implementation. What was the name of that alternative for smaller systems? LS what?
LXLE, Lima X-Ray, Lima Echo.
Okie dokie, and it would also run on your little 32 meg machine?
That I'm not entirely sure. To concur with Paul's comment, it may not. In fact, I was just about to cut a CD here shortly after downloading the ISO, and I'm going to see. You know, worst case, it turns out I've just wasted a little bit of time and wasted one CD. But Paul's right. Some of these antique machines just don't have the right chipsets to be able to support code that written more recently.
I gotcha. All right, very good. Well, we'll find out. One other question. Have you loaded this thing almost universally from CDs, or have you, a bootable CD, or have you taken the initiative to locate a downloadable runtime that you can put on a thumb drive, for instance, like a bootloader?
Well, I've, on this and different machines recently, I've used pretty much every imaginable way of loading new operating systems on old machines, and they would include using an old floppy disk drive, which is sitting right next to me here. I've got a pack of lightly used 1.44 megabyte floppy disks sitting here connected to the machine. CDs, as Paul had mentioned, USB thumb drives, and I haven't done it in a while, but I have done it a couple of times. Initiated a Pixie boot, which is a PXE, which is having the machine request an operating system load over the network. Of course, that's a bit more complicated in that you have to set up another server somewhere on your network that has the operating system image and will respond to a request from another machine on the network. So it's certainly not impossible to do, but it's a little more complicated than most people would usually take on. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, back to K2BAR.
It would be kind of fun to note the load over the internet, the download image, whatever you have to do, load from a thumb drive or from a CD, and then loading from a server across your LAN, across a simple mesh, let's say a one-hop mesh connection. It'd be very interesting to compare all those from a performance viewpoint on the same platform with the same OS. So it's an internet network load versus a mesh network load. It'd be very interesting. It'll be slower, but how much slower is the question. Although it may not be. Never know. Alrighty, as I roll into the Essex Falls at warp speed, let's see. Anybody else have any comments for Randy?
W2TK.
I missed that. Whiskey Alpha 2 Tango Kilo again.
Whiskey 2 Tango Kilo Echo.
Good evening, Frank. W2TKE. K2BAR, your commenter.
Ubuntu was mentioned, but just so folks know, it does come in a diet version. If there is a Lubuntu out there, which is their lighter, slimmer version, I've used it. It works. I'm actually running it in a virtual environment here at home. I don't know if it'll work on a machine that has 32 mega RAM, but I've had success with it in the past. Just to throw that in there. W2TK.
Yeah, Lubuntu. Lubuntu with an L in front of it. Alrighty. That's actually a very good choice, too. Again, I'm not so sure to run on some of those really old ones. It's when you get to 386s, it's kind of like, that's kind of when I cry. Early Pentium, even the mobile Pentium should work generally for that kind of stuff. Alrighty. Anybody else?
N2MH.
A couple of people. Mark, you first. N2MH, K2BAR.
Yeah, a couple comments. First one being, of course, if you could find it, go back to some sort of Linux distribution from that era. Red Hat 4, Red Hat 5, something like that, if you can find it. And the other thing, booting off of a thumb drive becomes very dicey the older you get. yet, so the BIOS and the machine has to do that. And you know, I found if you're running Windows 95, 98, generally does the BIOS isn't there to do a thumb drive, so you really got to go back to basics.
Yeah, point taken.
Yep.
Right. I think every machine I have here runs XP as a preferred operating system, but it doesn't mean that the BIOS isn't from a bygone era of Windows 98. That's a good point. Who is the other station with a comment underneath, Mark?
82HPY.
82 Hotel Papa Yankee. Go ahead.
I'm curious if the intention is to save old hardware or to create new operating systems for a particular task. And the reason I'm going there is because I used to have a basement full of hardware, Spark stations, Deck Alphas, just you name it, tons of old hardware that I wound up consolidating and buying a relatively cheap Intel i7 processor and running virtualization software, VirtualBox in my case, and doing a physical to virtual conversion of all my old systems into virtualized environments and running those on a single machine, and actually getting rid of all my old hardware, which was difficult to support, was failing, expensive to maintain, etc. So I'm just curious if the intention was to resurrect old hardware, which is honorable. I definitely appreciate that. I still have an Apple II in my basement. Or whether it was to achieve a task which could easily be done with virtualization.
That's a great question. I think the answer is more the former than the latter, but and the task being to put workstations in the hands of people who can do MCOM most of the time, and we don't have a lot of money, so we're resurrecting these older platforms that people will cheerfully give to us, or that we have laying around, as the case may be, and we can operationalize in a current environment with real-world tools. I mean, you can't be running, old crappy web browsers. I mean, you can't run, Windows 6, Internet Explorer 6, I should say, for instance, on an XP machine. There's all sorts of concerns about that, whereas if you run a Linux machine, it may or may not have that same negative cachet. Having said that, there's among some of us more than a boutique interest in an i7 virtualization environment, so that we can essentially blow away virtual machines and we screw up and don't have to trash the mother machine, the core machine itself, and take every other application down. So virtualization is another fork in the road, as it were. I hate to use that term. It was a bad double entendre, but you get the point.
Roger that. I copy. The interesting thing is that with the virtual, with trying to run the old systems on the old hardware, you open yourself up to a lot of vulnerabilities that have been dealt with, patched, whatever, on the newer versions, which you can virtualize.
Exactly. Yep. I mean, it doesn't matter whether, there's a whole point is not to use the old versions of operating systems to get away with it, but to have multiple virtual machines running separate application environments in, should we say, soft spaces, and that can come and go as the stability of the software so dictates. That's a beautiful thing. So that's the nature of the virtualized environment. By the way, I am on 280 heading up the hill. Just for Mark. Alrighty, let's see. Anybody else have comments on this subject? Alrighty.
Connected KC2ASA.
I think we had somebody on the Echo Link. Alrighty. Randy, over to you.
again, thanks everybody for the lively discussion, the great comments, points all very well taken, all very important, and I guess the, you know, one of the motivations for this was, as Gordon said, is to see if we can repurpose in some useful way old hardware that could serve some limited purposes in deployments and maybe even get banged up or you know, ruined in the case. I mean, I certainly wouldn't cry a lot if this old laptop you know, fell apart during an deployment, during an outdoor deployment, you know, as long as it serves some useful purpose when it was needed. So, you know, there are some use cases where it's good to have this stuff available and put to some use. On the other hand, as others have mentioned, you got to recognize the real limitations of this stuff. But it's fun to try new things, and particularly on this older hardware, it may for a lot of people be a very nice and easy introduction to a variety of Linux if they haven't gotten familiar with it yet. And it's something that you can learn slowly on your own, another set of useful skills. So again, thanks to everybody, the comments and the on using Linux. It's something that we'll probably pursue more from time to time with demonstrations at the local club meetings. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, back to K2BAR.
Very good. Alrighty. That's useful. Okie doke. Any final comments from anybody on this subject? Alrighty. Let me just put in my commercial for the one-day amateur radio class, which will be on Friday the 26th of December, St. John the Evangelist Church basement, 8 a.m. till 6 p.m. Bring your lunch, your snacks, blah, blah, blah. Your beverages, you can order out if you like. We will be providing pizza for dinner, and we ask for a $20 donation to A, to pay the pizza, and B, to subsidize our scouting endeavors in amateur radio, which are pretty intense. They get about half the troop, generally speaking, at any given time, licensed, which is pretty cool. And now a bunch of parents, which is even better. Alrighty, with that in mind, we also have some online study materials I can point people to. Just email me at www.ttt@arrl.net. Alrighty, with that in mind, let's see. Let's go to our next comment. And Steve, I'm trying to remember who that is, but I'm going to ask you to take this next section because I'm going to be at Mark's front door for a couple of minutes, in about a minute.
Okay, this is the... WI2W speaking for K2BAR. I think Matt had a question, WA2NHZ. Well, we'll move on, and maybe Matt will come back. Alex, KD2FTA, go ahead with your question.
Good evening, W2TTT, and everybody else on the net this evening. Always an interesting net. I'm going to change gears a little bit here on everybody and hopefully not trip too many folks up. Last weekend, as some of us may recall, if they're into it like I am, we had the annual Geminid meteor shower. And so once more there was a little bit of flurry of activity, no pun intended, with some of the members of my club anyway. Looking to do some moon bounce and meteor scatter. And it's always interesting to see the various articles out there where there are adventurous and enterprising hams that try to do moon bounce with very, very limited resources, as in one antenna, and in one case, one article I read where the gentleman was out on the beach on the Jersey Shore in the Cape May area and was attempting moon bounce with one antenna and I think 50 watts, which really to me on a 2 meter frequency was very impressive. But the question is very simple. In the opinion of the masses here this evening, what is the best system of antennas and or an antenna to try a simple moon bounce in a digital mode, not necessarily a voice mode, but a digital mode? This is KD2FTA back over to net control.
Okay, would anyone like to comment on that?
Well, I could real quick. 50 watts on the beach. Did he make a contact, and how big was the station he did?
Gordon, it's an ARRL article, and it goes back a couple of years. And the contacts, I think, were made in Europe, of all places. How big was the antenna? It was a rather long Yagi with several elements. I don't recall exactly how many elements, but he was able to point it at the moon and keep it pointed at the moon.
But he did make a contact.
Yeah, roger that. He most certainly did. Otherwise, I think the article would have been, a failure.
Alrighty, that sounds pretty cool. Well, I know Ray Soifer used to do that from Glen Rock, single Yagi, and I believe 100 watts. And that was in the days before, you know, these ultra narrow band, you know, digital modes. He was doing that with CW, but good for him. Good for him. Let's see, I'm looking here. Okay, so I got a second line. Okay. Alrighty. That's pretty neat, though, I must say. Anybody else have any comments? Well, I'll just leave you with this, and I got to get out of the car for a moment. But let's see. I was a young pup, for lack of a better term. I was able to use 8 five-element Yagis and later Quaggies. Thank you, Wayne Overbeck, and 6NB, then K6YNB. I couldn't elevate them, but I could drill. They were 4 across and 2 high, and I had a kilowatt on 2 meters. And let me tell you, I got that to work. Boy, that was a pain in the ass, but really worked well. The lack of elevation really made me suffer.
Okay, so if you don't mind my asking, Gordon, you had two sets of arrays, 5 elements, and you said 4 and 4, and so you spaced everything out using the formulas and so forth, but you used 500 watts, did you say?
Yeah, a kilowatt to the antenna, and I had, I am desperately lost here, that's better, thanks, anyway, was able to use 8, they were 4 across and 2 high, so that basically allowed me an 8 bay array, but instead of putting it 4x4 or 2, I put 8 across and 8, you know, and probably 4 across in 2 rows.
Were they horizontally or vertically polarized?
Definitely horizontally. Everything I could do to get rid of the noise was in my favor.
What were the 8 ports that powered by?
This was voice?
It was CW. And the answer was I had a 2-port Wilkinson power divider feeding 2 4-ports.
Very good, very good. All right, well, you've at least pointed me in one direction. I've read several articles to that effect, too, that you gain decibels by stacking them up and using Yagi's. I was just curious to see if anybody else had a different approach.
K.E.K. with a comment.
Go ahead, Don.
One of our former Barra members, John, in 2PBY, had a pickup truck with a crank-up tower mounted in the back of it, and a travel trailer attached to the back end of his pickup truck, and with a generator and a whole nine yards. And what he would do was go up to a place like High Point with this as a setup as a portable operation. Around Bergen County, there's just too much electronic pollution, and getting away from all that, being out in the boondocks someplace, was a benefit. So that's one way he did to affect his boondocks. I know he's done it. I don't remember the. I know the antenna was. I think he had a couple of Yagis on the tower. I just exactly what it was, but. That was a thing he did with it. It was maybe portable so he could get away from the noise. Back to that.
All right, anybody else have any comments? I'll throw one comment in. EME's still on my bucket list, so I'll be here for a little while longer. I haven't finished everything yet. Putting together 8 Yagis is a significant expense if you have to go buy Yagis. If you want them all to be the same, there is a design by Kent Britton, WA5VJB, I think all is, called Cheap Yagis. Google Cheap Yagi. You'll find a way that you can make Yagis out of 1x2s from the hardware store and whatever you can scrape up for elements, aluminum ground wire. Making 1 or 2 Yagis isn't going to get your moon bounce, but if you do something like Gordon, where you want to put 8 of them together, you might actually be able to do it for a reasonable amount of money. So just a thought. Conventional wisdom says cheap Yagis are not the way to go for moon bounce, but I think given the low cost and a little bit of experimentation, you might be surprised, particularly if you're using a diesel. Any final comments? WI2W.
So much a comment, but just a statement back on what was said about moving portably out of an area with high density, electronics going on in the background, power lines and so on. I think part of the success that gentleman had on the beach was the fact that he was on the beach and he was bouncing a signal on a relatively flat plane, and the water acted as a good reflector as well, I would think.
Absolutely. Nothing like a saltwater ground plane. Any other comments, Alex?
We're good. I think I got what I was looking for. This is KD2FTA. Thanks for the advice and the participation, and we'll be on the side here listening. Back over to Net Control.
Okay, thank you. Next up, question from Peter, KC2ASA. No, I didn't.
There's one I have to check over there. But no, it's very similar in how the space is great. I cut net, but fun to some other things to read, but I've been monitoring. Great talk, and I'll support the cast for tonight. Definitely have plenty of topics to bring up in the future, so very much.
Okay, Peter, well, thanks for checking in, and come back and see us real soon now. Anybody else have any comments or questions? All right, I think that covers everybody that checked in with their comments and questions. I'll make one comment before we close the net tonight. I did have the opportunity to go out to Gordon's Hamfest and support the scout troop, and was really happy to see that both Gordon and Mark N2MH brought out their mesh networking gear. There were 4 nodes set up. One setup had a video camera on it that Gordon had, and Mark had some PBX phones running with a microcomputer. I really enjoyed the talk that Mark gave, and it really opened my eyes up to some of the different things you can do with a mesh network. One of which was if you're supporting an event like a bicycle ride or a race, you can put a node at each one of your checkpoints, plug in one of these PBX telephones, and give the non-hams